everybody, to Sailor Moon Set, the very first podcast dedicated to the Deke era of Sailor Moon. I am your host, Ramses, and with me is Comrade Furry.
That would be me, again.
That would be you.
In the flesh,
vocally. In the digital flesh.
in the vocal flesh. Let's move on.
Yeah, this isn't some, like, Cronenberg bullshit. But, yeah, it was something that me and Comrade Furry and a couple other people, we're back and forth on doing this type of show for about a year now. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was like, look, I'll do this show if I don't have to edit. But as time went on and I started discovering more tools to do edit, to streamline a lot of my editing work vastly. Like, it's to the point where I can get an episode out by, like, the evening. And it's impressive when our guests that have been on the show, on my other show, Saint Seiya Cosmocast, where it's like some of them are like, oh, it's already out already? I thought it'd be longer. Like, no, because out. We streamlined everything with all of our stuff, so I figured, like, look, we have our streamlined technology and we can get away with, like, at least slotting in one or two more I can slot in doing one or more two more things, and I figured, you know what, like, and Comrade Fred brought this up, it's like, you know, we see a lot of people talk about the new dub that's really good, and we also talk to people who are watching the subtitle version or whatever version they're watching, but you know, the Deke dub is always viewed as an afterthought or a footnote on a lot of these subjects. And I figured, let's put a dedicated spotlight into this dub, because, like, there's some of us that kind of, like, grew up with it, and we're kind of, like, shielded away from the kind of cynicism of, like, oh my god, this dub is, like, doing things wrong, yada yada yada. We'll still bring that stuff up, because there's obviously a lot of things that went wrong with this. We were just talking about it off air, but there's an inherent charm to this dub, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a double-edged kind of sword situation, because it's charming and it's nostalgic, depending on if you were the right age for that. I would even go as far to say if you were around, I guess, because I at first I said the right age because I was like, well, you needed to be a kid because an adult might not appreciate it. But at the same time, back in the 90s, it was kind of a different way of, like, a different pipeline of, like, anime to consumer, and that's all we really had, except for the movies, which got a subtitled, like, uncut release for a very, very long time. All we had for the show was the Deke dub, legally. I mean, there were some other channels where you could get, you know, fan subs and stuff like that. There was, like, old VHS trading rings and websites and stuff like that, but for the most part, all we could really consume legally easily was the Deke dub. So it's got that nostalgia factor for a lot of people, because it's how they were introduced to Sailor Moon. Like, it was most people's gateway to getting it started. So it's also, when you grow up and you realize that they changed a billion things, then it's like, eh.
And it's interesting when you say that, because when you bring up that point, because, like, I was following a blog at the time, like, around the time the Toonami airing was on. And it was a Sailor Moon Uncensored. It's run by a good friend of mine, Jan Brzezanski. Like, he is a great friend of mine. He's actually come in and actually helped me out early on with this Cosmocast. So he's MVP of my book. Because, like, you know, it's proof that, like, the Sailor Moon fandom and, like, the Saint Seiya fandom, you know, they can shake hands, you know, and assist each other. Mm-hmm. Again, this is why we're doing this show as well. And you're right, because, like, there was a bit of cynicism at the time. Because, like, there were people like, oh my god, like, there's this dub, you know, and you're like, but at the same time, too, you gotta realize when you look at it from the perspective of, like I was, like, I'm not gonna steal your age, but I was 13 at the time when this aired. I had no money and no real method of really getting anime, like legit, like, through, like, VHS release. So, like, the stuff on TV is what we had. And because of that, you know, you have, like, you know, you have this generation that grew up with this. You know, and, like, and I'm pretty sure, like I said, like, I'm pretty sure that there's a contingency of fans that are, like, that think about this as, like, look at it in a cynical view, but we're going to try to look at it from the view of someone that was kind of, like, growing up at the time, and hopefully we can, like, bridge that gap between the people that kind of grew up at the time and the people, like most of us, people like myself who were kind of on the fence and, like, figuring out that things were different. I learned things very differently, believe it or not. And that kind of, like, that weird cynicism of older fans. So,
go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna transition us to our first topic, talking point, because like basically what we're gonna do is just introduce ourselves, introduce the show, and then introduce other, and then read off a little bit of our responses that we got on Twitter as well. But I figured, like, you know, it's the first episode, and I doubt, like, you know, a lot of people listen. Like, we hope that other people listen to our podcast, our other podcasts that we host. Like, you know, after they listen to this episode, because like we would really appreciate that as well. But but you know, if you haven't heard like if you haven't heard about what we us about who we are exactly, I was thinking about introduction and just saying like where we like how we got introduced to Sailor Moon. So Conrad Furry, tell us a little about yourself, and also tell us a little bit about like how you got introduced to them.
I grew up in the South in the 90s. I was a 90s baby, and there was a lot of stuff that we got late. A lot of stuff that we didn't get at all just because of my proximity in the country. I look back and I see a lot of people, like, for instance, I never saw the Sailor Moon dolls on shelves. And it's not like, oh, I'm a boy, I don't go down the girl aisle. Like, I was all over, like, Walmart, and when we got Target, I was all over Target, like, looking at stuff, and I never saw any of that in our stores. I didn't see a lot of the Pokemon merchandise when it was all in the hype. Like, we missed a lot of stuff. But my point is that one of the things that we did get was the Sailor Moon makeup. I know this sounds really... I'm going somewhere with this, so bear with me. I was never interested in makeup. Like, for all intents and purposes, for everybody to know, I am openly gay. I don't go with the whole, oh, you have to be masculine or feminine. You can just be whoever you want to. I just personally was never interested in makeup, you know, at all. But my neighbor was a girl that was the same age as me, and she was just discovering cutesy things like lip gloss and blush and stuff like that. Like, stuff that younger, like, 7 to 10-year-olds would find as cool makeup. And she was buying this Sailor Moon branded makeup, and I'd never heard of it before. Like, the logo looked interesting. One of the packages did have Sailor Moon on it, but for the most part, it was a logo. And this was in, like, the baby days of the internet, so I was searching, and I saw images of Sailor Moon, and I thought it was cool. But when I looked at when it came on, it was like Monday through Friday at like 5 a.m. And I was like 6-year-old, so I was not getting up that early. So flash forward a few years later, it popped up on Toonami, and I was already, like I said, vaguely familiar about it because I had seen it. I'd seen products and stuff. Again, not the toys, so I wasn't super familiar with what it was about, but the branding, the name, I recognized. And I kind of got hooked. And it was... That and Dragon Ball Z were kind of my gateway into anime, because Toonami was slowly transitioning from just a cartoon-centric to be more of anime-centric specifically around that time in the late 90s, because they started acquiring more shows like Yu Yu Hakusho and Big O, and I think Cowboy Bebop was always Adult Swim, maybe for a little bit.
It was. It was one of the initial Adult Swim shows, but I was thinking actually you mentioned Dragon Ball was around that same time, and then Robotech and
Robotech. Nadesco was very briefly on Toonami. People don't really remember that, but I very specifically remember that because I couldn't pronounce the name of it. But my point is that we were talking a little bit earlier about how the dub can be kind of cringe. Like, Deke, even for its time, was cringe. Mm-hmm. Like, even within the span of the 90s, because the American view on cartoons was that they were for kids. The East Asian view on cartoons, specifically Japan, but also in Korea and China, and other countries around that area, they were viewed as primarily for kids, but in kind of the way Pixar does now, there were reasons for adults to still be interested. And it's because, you know, adults have disposable income, and if they're interested in it, they will buy the merchandise, or at least buy it for their children if they've made some kind of connection with it. So it makes sense. But this was our first inkling of like Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z were our first kind of introduction to cartoons. And I don't crucify me for calling Dragon Ball Z a cartoon, please don't. But animation that had adults and kids in mind. But of course, Deke was still clinging to that 80s, early 90s view of cartoons are for kids. So it was definitely dumbed down. But the thing is, there wasn't a whole lot other than editing around some violence and some like partial nudity to make the animation not stick out as much. And the animation is really what drew me in, is because it looks so different than anything else we had on television at the time. Like in the past, there were shows like G.I. Joe and Transformers and Jim and the Holograms that were animated in Japan, but still had very American feeling concept designs because they were meant to fit in the United States. But Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z were not. They were just straight up anime that had been dubbed in English. And it was kind of like they had the boy show with Dragon Ball Z and they had the girl show with Sailor Moon. But what I don't think they realized is that they actually overlap so significantly because they weren't as extremely gendered as a lot of the like American cartoons from the time were. Like, yes, Sailor Moon wanted to have like her nails painted, like Serena. We're doing the Deke dub, so she's Serena now. Sorry. Serena wanted to have, like, she wanted to go buy pretty jewelry with her friends and she wanted to wear makeup and stuff like that. But she also like fought and did cool stuff. And then it was kind of the reverse in Dragon Ball Z. Like, yeah, these characters are beating each other up, but they still had families and they still cared about each other and they shared deep connections. And, you know, the story wasn't just isolated to one thing. So I feel like this is my long-winded way of saying that Sailor Moon was my introduction to anime. And that, yes, while the Deke dub did change a lot, because I don't want to say it had to, because, I mean, if you really think about it, it didn't have to. But for them, for it to be as successful as they wanted it to be, and probably as much as it ended up being, they needed to make changes to it to make it more fit in with an American audience. And it just has a weird charm to it. Like, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, like, they would make, like, 90s pop culture references when talking about stuff. And they would, you know, edit around violence and make it a little bit more silly. Like, it was a different way of thinking about bringing properties from Japan over that I'm glad is mostly gone right now, because most of the adaptions are pretty straightforward these days, I feel like. But, you know, this without Sailor Moon's dub, we kind of went over this. If you follow my other podcast, Ancient Anime, Scarlett and I kind of, Scarlett is a very prominent cosplayer in the Sailor Moon community. Sorry. To shoehorn her in there. But we talked about how if it hadn't been for the Deke dub of Sailor Moon, where would anime be today? Because that was one of the biggest booms in anime. So it's one of those things that's fun to think about. But basically, I hopped on the Toonami hype train and I never left.
All right. You briefly said, like, you briefly said also you host a podcast, Ancient Anime. If you can give like a minute or two to like explain that, what it is, if you so choose to.
Yeah, so Ancient Anime, we have talked about Sailor Moon on there before, but essentially what Ancient Anime is my podcast about 80s and 90s anime in a bit of a more broad sense. And just actually, we recently started taking suggestions from the early 2000s, just because that was 20 years ago, as much as I hate to think about how the time passage works.
I'm like crumbling to dust as we speak.
Yeah, it's like I only want to do stuff from over 20 years ago. And one of our friends is like, well, 2020 or 2002 was 20 years ago. And I'm like, I don't think we should speak for a couple of days. That was very rude what you said there. But anyway, so we watch these older anime properties, and I'll have a guest on. I rotate. There's a few people, Ramsey's being one of them, that pop up frequently, and then I have some one-off guests. But basically, we just pick a show to watch that one of the hosts is pretty familiar with. But most of the time, we haven't watched it in an extended period of time, and then we watch it, and we come to the conclusion, is it a good piece of media, or are we just feeling nostalgic about it? So far, we've only covered the first Sailor Moon movie, and we didn't talk a lot about the dub, because by this point, I'm pretty sure by the time the movies got dubbed, it had moved on to the Cloverway group. Because I think that was when Pioneer took over the license and they were working with Cloverway when, because I'm trying to remember, I should have this all before me.
I do believe that their victory lap, the victory lap for the Deke dub with some of those actors was with the movies. So
Either way, we watched the Funimation dub. Is what I was trying to say, like, because that was the one that is like legally available to buy. So it was a little bit of a strange episode because the movie that we were watching was nostalgic, but the voices were all new. Just because it was much, much easier to locate the movie dubbed with the Funimation. And we were on a little bit of a time crunch because that's when we were on a weekly basis. We're on a bi-weekly basis now. We'll be coming back in
soon,
late February, depending on a couple of different things. But yeah, it's my podcast that I have been working on and dreaming of and making a reality for a very long time. And it's had a lot of challenges, but we've had a lot of successes. It's been a lot of fun. And I won't say a lot for the rest of the podcast.
No, that's perfectly fine because we still have some other things we need to get through. But as for me, my introduction to Sailor Moon was, believe it or not, like I remember watching because I got to think, like, I'm gonna say this right now. If I start saying stuff like Sailor, like Saint Seiya, kind of like if I start talking about Saint Seiya, I'm sorry, but I do feel that that show for me, because I was watching, because I was also watching at the same time, because I was still living in Mexico. A lot of those feelings you were talking about, like, oh, it was my first anime. All that stuff is with Saint Seiya. And I remember once I was watching TV, you know, like it was 1996, and I remember watching Fox Kids. And they gave a commercial for Sailor Moon, and it looked, because it had like the same kind of art style as Saint Seiya. I was like, "Yeah, I'll go watch it." And it was a preview episode. It was the first episode of the Doomtree arc. I don't know why you would pick that. I don't know why you pick an episode so far off to be your first introduction to the series, but that's what had happened. But I watched it, and I was really interested in it. And I followed the series afterwards. Like, it was airing at, like, I was airing a more reasonable time, like 8 o'clock in the morning here in where I live. But like, I got to watch it. It was great. I enjoyed it. But here's where things get interesting. I said I lived in Mexico because I was living between two parts of the world. I was living at a border state in Mexico. So I was getting stuff from United States and Mexico at the same time, and it's like with no problems whatsoever. So for me, I was still watching Saint Seiya, and it was interesting because like at the same time that Saint Seiya was like winding down, like it was like getting to its final episodes of the Poseidon arc, they started airing ads for Sailor Moon, and eventually Sailor Moon took over the time slot of like Saint Seiya, while Saint Seiya went to an earlier time slot. But I watched it I watched that dub of Sailor Moon in Spanish, and it was interesting to me because it was a show that at that point I realized something was up with the show, because I was like, at the second episode, because they air two episodes a week, the second episode was not the second episode that aired in the United States, and it was a completely different episode to the point where I was like, oh, I see what happened here. They had to change it because of all this stuff. Because it was like this episode where like all the boys were suddenly become delinquent, and at one point they, Umaru, aka Melvin, he like flips off Miss Haruna's dress, and she's like, and she gets embarrassed. But it's like, so I'm like, yeah, I could totally see like there's changes. Why they had to get rid of that episode? So. Yeah. And then so I knew right away that there was something very different from this version of the show than the other version of the show. Obviously, after that, I went to the United States. When I went to the United States, it started airing on USA, and then after it aired on USA, it finally aired on Toonami. Around that same time too, like the internet was starting to get a little bit more prominent. I was paying more attention to the internet and whatnot, and I was seeing like all the stuff, all the edits and whatnot, and I was seeing all the fan websites, and you know, I kind of got engrossed by it. You know, I kind of got devoured by like the hype of it, and you know, like I enjoyed this dub, and I enjoy the subsequent dub of Cloverwave, but like I think I have a little bit more nostalgia for this dub, and like you said, like there's a lot of things we can discuss about Deke and stuff like that, and like and as for who I am exactly, my name is Ramses, so you may have heard it earlier. I host a podcast called the Saint Seiya Cosmocast. It's a Saint Seiya centered podcast about like the world of Saint Seiya. We do it every 2 weeks, which is going to alternate between this show and the other show. And it's pretty much a show where it's like we talk about every week about Saint Sam, just everything going around, all the goings on in English. So we're the very first podcast to do that. You know, we got a lot of accolades from a lot of people internationally for our, you know, for our coverage in the United States. But you know, I'm really proud of that. And I also host another show, more pop culture centric show called the Saturday Morning Squadron. Originally, this was going to be a Saturday Morning Squadron topic because on that show we would just talk about pop culture in general. But and then like we would pick a topic, but I figured like the scope of this deserves its own like show. So if you're wondering who this guy's hosting, what he does, there you go. And like, you know, like I said, I've been in the fandom off and on since the internet days. And like I said, I've been doing a lot of stuff with other fandoms as well. But I figured, okay, since you brought up Deke and you brought up our origins, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about like how Sailor Moon got here to the United States? Because like we now have a roadmap as like what went down mm-hmm. before we knew vaguely how things were going to play out. But now we kind of like now thanks to like people like Ray Mana who done an incredible documentary on like the prehistory of Sailor Moon with Saban Moon, we now kind of like a clear like path as to like what went down from them pitching the series to getting the show on syndication. So we kind of have a roadmap as to like what happened. Obviously, of course, Sailor Moon started in 1992, I believe.
Is it 92 or 93?
I thought it was 92. Yeah, 92, because it was like the beginning.
It just
of, like,
hit
the...
an anniversary. The
yeah, yeah, it an... was last year. Yeah, you're right. It was 30th anniversary last year. Oh my god, I'm crumbling more into dust. Ah, that will snap me. But regardless, like it was introduced in 1992, and it was doing and like it, like how all anime does. It's like it hits Europe first, I believe. Like one of the first major markets that got Sailor Moon was France, and it did really well in France. And another part, I believe, too, it hit Italy as well before it. And we were kind of like the next market over to get it. Well, actually, no, it was first China, and then after that, it was France, and then it was Italy, and then we went. Then it came to the United States, and then we got back one. And I think the pre-production from the series was in 95-ish. When they were proposing to do the series as a hybrid at live action / animated TV show, it was going to star Adrian Barbeau from such movies as Escape from New York and Swamp Thing, two movies I unironically love. And, excuse me?
I was just going to say, yeah, it was going to be, they described it, and the pilot that got uncovered was basically like Sailor Moon was going to be like Saved by the Bell meets like She-Ra and He-Man, basically, because, I mean, even the animation was very similar to like the She-Ra, like super colorful, very rounded looking late 80s, early 90s animation style. But they were, during the day, it was going to be like a slice of life, because it's Deke. So before we get super far into this, we're talking about the Deke dub, so I'm going to use a lot of Deke terminology, and I know that makes Sailor Moon fans very, very angry, but it's the spirit of what we're doing. So the Sailor Scouts were all living like normal human lives, and then when they go into the like parallel dimension, other world, or whatever, they become animated. So when they do their magical girl transformations, it's all animated from there on out. So it's going to be kind of like sitcom almost, is the feel that I got.
I wouldn't say sitcom. It was like that. It was very prominently around the same time. Like there was a lot of shows. They're trying to do a push for more kid orientated like dramas. I remember at the same time they were doing Sweet Valley High from the books, and I can't remember what else they were trying to do. But you can tell they were trying to go with that angle with it.
They wanted Power Rangers is what they wanted to recreate the success of Power Rangers, and Power Rangers.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense.
Slice of life bit, because as the show went on, they overlapped more. But in the beginning of Power Rangers, there was a clear divide of the high school drama stuff that was happening when they were like in their day to day lives versus the more fantastical fights with the robots and the monsters and things like that to kind of juxtapose them together. and to make them more relatable, you know, high school teens type of show. And I think that that's really what they're wanting to go with, to have to kind of capture as much of the market as they could in the same way Power Rangers did. Because I was just gonna say that's been kind of a staple in magical girl shows anyway, so they weren't that far off from the formula.
Well, I was gonna say it doesn't help too that the people that were doing this pilot, this live action pilot, it was Renaissance Atlantic, and they were responsible for Power Rangers, and they were just getting like shows from Japan like all over the place. They're trying their best like see whatever sticks at the wall. And we did an interview with someone on our other show, Saints Got Cosmocast, and I think you've heard this interview too with Marlene Sharp, who was on the Raymond's more recent video based on another show a show that you're not gonna like, you're gonna get sick of hearing us talk about, Saint Seiya, where they talk about a pilot from when they uncovered a pilot from like their archives as well. So yeah. There were so many shows that were in the mix at Renaissance Atlantic, and just things just kind of fell through because I don't know if either like, you know, budgetary reasons most likely, because like doing a show like this, it's not cheap, and you're expected a return from this. And you know, let's not mince words with what's going on. Like, girls' toys, unless you're Barbie, you're dead in the water. So toy sales wouldn't be a viable avenue for profit. Well, so I'm pretty sure like they saw what the cost between doing the show in this way versus just dubbing it, and they went with Deke at the end of the day, and just said Deke was like, fuck it, like they're known in the industry as do it cheap. So they did the cheapest thing they could and just edited the Japanese stuff.
Well, I mean, they, like we said, they were trying to recreate the hype of Power Rangers, and the blessing of Power Rangers for them is that it was already in live action. And yes, there was a very glaring disparity between the quality of the American footage and the quality of the Japanese footage, and it was very obvious to tell when they were swapping back and forth, because Japanese shows at the time, just because I'm a nerd and know this, they produced so many television shows at the time that they used a lower grade quality of tape than the United States shows do, because they were creating all of these like Super Sentai and Kamen Rider and like various other tokusatsu shows, which is like live action Japanese superheroes. But each season was 50 episodes, like Ultraman. All of these shows were so long that they had to do the cheapest options possible. So just the quality of the footage when you swapped from American to Japanese footage was very noticeable, but it was still able to work. Whereas even if I think if they'd gone with the method of just scrapping the Renaissance Atlantic footage and having the live action girls transform into the literal like Sailor Moon anime, I don't think that would have meshed as well as the Power Rangers did. So I think when it came down to it, they just needed something cheap, because there was, like you said, there's no guarantee that this was going to be a hit. It was a hit in other countries that had more longstanding positive views on animation, and not that America's view on animation was negative. It was just for kids. Like, there was almost no adult animation, and if it was, it was usually relegated to a super niche like fandom or a super niche group of people.
Or the Simpsons.
Yeah. Or The Simpsons. But animation wasn't seen as a viable all ages type of thing. It was something you made for kids. And depending on who you talk to, that's still true in the United States. Depending on which streaming platform's president you want to talk to about that. But we won't go into that. Because it's not really worth it. But yeah, it was a cheaper option. It was the option that made more sense, because other companies had already done it with like Dragon Ball, and to a less notable and more horrific sense, Robotech.
Oh God, yes. So, but that's a really good topic, by the way, for like the Saturday Morning Squad and one of these, because like it was designed. It was actually designed to be like a stylized TV show, like a drama, believe it or not. So like, to credit, a lot of the stuff that we kind of cringe upon with Harmony Gold, like them editing all these shows together, it was by design. It was like, unlike this, where it was like they kind of had to do it because it's the cheapest thing they could do.
Yeah. Well, the problem with anime in general, and this is another reason why Sailor Moon was chosen, why it took so long for Sailor Moon to move to the United States market, is that the television standards was, if you're going to have a syndicated show, which is the cheapest way to get a television show on, and it was most kids' content was syndicated, it needed at least 65 episodes. But the average
minimum.
The average Japanese anime show was between 45 and 50 episodes. Some of them were even 26. So when it came time for Robotech, they had to splice these shows together in order to get it on television and make it any form of success. But Sailor Moon lucked out in that by the time they got around to starting to dub it, it had already gotten a second season that continued the narrative, continued all the characters. There was no jarring real change between the seasons, minus the characters not having their memories for a couple of episodes. But that was, I mean, in the narrative, it made sense. So Sailor Moon had the benefit of them not having to splice in some other show to pad it out to be more episodes. And it also was a double-edged sword because that also gave them plenty of room to just completely get rid of episodes that they were thought even were slightly offensive. Like the one with Melvin that you were talking about where he harassed the teacher. There's another really early episode that was cut because she used the disguise pin to sneak into a bar. All episodes that I feel like if they had to, they could have creatively cut around them, but because they had such a buffer room of episodes to keep them at that 65 episode mark, they just started nixing stuff left and right. Like, it got a little crazy there at the beginning. Like, if you go and look at a list of, like, skipped or banned episodes, almost all of them are from the first season, and they're all from early in the first season because they were just kind of... They were... Not only that, but I think they also wanted to get to Mercury and Mars as fast as possible, too, to kind of balance out the cast, because also single-hero superhero shows were not popular at the time either when you look at what else was successful at the time, too, so... Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that went into what Deke did, and we'll get more into that when we get to the actual episodes that we're talking about, which will actually be really, really quickly, because, like I said, a lot of the skipped episodes are right there at the front.
Yeah, and, yeah, and like I said, and, like, and also, too, it's like another thing that was happening was, thanks to a lot of shifts in the industry of network television, there are new networks, there was new syndicators popping up, and because of like different shifts of because of stuff like here in the United States, at least, because like who got like different rights to different things in terms of sports, different things started like falling to different networks and stuff like that. So they needed more content to fill in that gap. So obviously at the time they didn't really, like the Deagle wasn't really in the market to like do something like this epic thing. I think more than anything, they just needed some filler content to make the money off advertising. Really, that's why they just went with the cheapest route possible for this. I can go more in depth, but there's a really good YouTube series about this, about all this changes, because like it's more centered on the beginnings of Fox Kids. Mm-hmm. And the person is Jessie, and she has been doing this amazing show about she's been doing this amazing YouTube show about like just the origins of Fox Kids, and like she's going through all the shows one by one, and she does describe a lot about like how those early things were going on with like how the network things were shifting, and they needed more content to fill in that gap. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so as you can tell, it started off one way because they were trying to do the next. They're trying to do the next Power Rangers, and then things kind of shifted to like just putting something on TV for the sake of just having something on TV, and like that's why a lot of syndicators got the show the first time. You're right. You got people that aired it like at 5:36 in the morning. Like kids are barely waking up at the time. The sun's not even out, and they're just like I'm pretty sure a lot of people that must have watched the show growing up must have either saw it like in a daze. Or they just completely miss it altogether. So again, thanks to the fans though, because like we're gonna get to talking about stuff like SOS, because I do want to talk about stuff like SOS, Save Our Sailors, because it's ridiculous when you figure out when you see that their story and stuff like that. But that's gonna happen. That's like a third quarter thing. We're barely on the first quarter when it comes to it. But right now, when it comes to stuff like that, like it got a second life thanks to petitions and thanks to stuff like that. So like it got aired again on USA. They were transitioning from the Cartoon Express, which is something that I loved a lot because that's how I got introduced to a lot of old cartoons from like the 70s and 60s, like Scooby-Doo and whatnot. And you know, they were transitioning to a more like original content for like more action oriented. Some of them work, some of them didn't. You know, the less we talk about Darkstalkers, the better. I know you're looking at me with that VHS set. Don't, no, stop.
I love that horrible mess of a show. This is the thing that a lot of people don't know about me is that, like, I genuinely like bad things. So maybe you shouldn't trust my opinion on things, but I get so much enjoyment out of watching these, like, specifically Deke shows, because they so often, like you said, they just gave off the vibe of we need to fill 22 minutes. They didn't give off the vibe of we need to tell a story. It's like, do literally whatever you can to fill this 22 minute block of time.
There's nothing more evident of that when you watch an episode of G.I. Joe from the Sunbow / like Hasbro era, which you can like find easily on YouTube. Like it's like when, like, if you're looking for a good time, you're looking for something to just turn on in the background and just watch, just watch pretty lights go off for a couple of hours. It's completely on YouTube. Like it's all there. You watch that and then you go find like the Deke episodes. It is night and day, because you can tell like the writers at the time of doing the stuff at Sumbo, they cared a lot more about telling a story.
Oh yeah.
Meanwhile, you go watch the Deke version. And it's like you can tell like, okay, Hasbro just dumped a bunch of toys. It's like, make something with these guys, and they just did that.
Yeah, it's like, and here's the batch of toys. Put them in the show in some capacity. Like, we don't care.
Yeah, and it sucks because like their origins, like, you know, again, I don't want to deviate too much, but like their origins were like they as a matter of fact, they actually started doing dubbing. That's how they got started, and they started doing really good dubs, and their first show, like their first like real show that they made was Inspector Gadget, and that show, like, you know, say what you will, but like that show is, you know, at least they put some sort of iota of like effort into it. Same with like another show, The Littles, as well. Looks like if you watch those two shows compared to like. I don't know. Like I said, I go back to that well of G.I. Joe, because like that's the one that just sticks out the most. Where it's like one show is like more story. Like at least they took some sort of effort to like tell a story on one of them, and then you see this and you're like, oh wow, they're just trying to fill 30 minutes here.
Just what they did to Darkstalkers, I will never forgive, and I will also always praise them for, because it one thing that I've learned from doing ancient anime and to a lesser extent the Cosmo Cast, as well as my stint on Saturday Morning Squadron, is that a lot back in the day, a lot of video games, because of the limitations at the time, just didn't have as fleshed out of a story, or if they did, it was hidden away in a manual book that most of the time you're not even going to read. So these shows that got adapted just went wild. I mean, like, when you look at something like Tekken with literal like panda bears and raptors and things like that, like they had no choice but to go wild. Still didn't do a good job. Still awful. The worst thing I've ever watched. Don't make me watch it again. And don't tell people it was my idea. I don't care about the accuracy of that statement. Don't be saying it. But it was.
He says on his episode of Ancient Anime.
I'm gonna remove that episode from syndication.
Oh God, no. You're gonna deke me.
I'm gonna deke it. I'm just gonna deke it out of existence. But no, like, so Deke has been well known for being extremely inconsistent. Is essentially what the point we're trying to get across is that sometimes they, more so in the early days, but sometimes they did really good stuff and sometimes they did okay stuff. And personally, I feel that Sailor Moon falls in the middle. Because they weren't involved with the animation, which I think the animation is really where Deke flubs up the most, because they are a budget studio, and it's painfully clear in a lot of the things that they show that they're a budget studio. But that doesn't mean that the writing is phenomenal either. But I think a lot of the changes that they made in Sailor Moon specifically made sense for the time.
Especially at the time.
Because like making Molly... given her a Brooklyn accent, she had an Osaka accent, which is more in line with maybe somebody with a Southern accent as far as like how that translates nowadays, in Japan.
Nowadays, most, if you do like a dub, if someone has an Osaka accent, they would usually usually give them like a Southern twang.
Yeah. But again, at the time, it was not something that had come up a lot because anime was in its baby days of being dubbed. And so that kind of made sense. Here's what I will say. Making Luna and Ami British, which is something that people bring up all the time and get upset about, it just goes back to the stereotype that they were supposed to be smart characters and the easiest way to get that across, because like, even today, people get blinded by the accents, and you can be saying some dumb stuff, but if you're British or Australian, it sounds like super immaculately worded.
Yeah, you can say the most horrible things, but if you're British or have like a British twang to it, get some sort of passing.
Yeah, it was a quick way. Like all of the voices they chose, I feel like are quick ways that you can get to know the character without having to have watched all the episodes before, because then that's another aspect to this that we haven't touched on yet, is that up until anime started being moved over to the United States and dubbed, a serialized cartoon where you had to have watched several episodes before for the plot to completely make sense was not a thing that happened really.
They experimented that before with stuff like Robotech, but like
right,
like and it, but again, that was experimented. That's the exception to the rule. That's not the standard.
Yeah, like most of them were in the sitcom type of format. Most cartoons were, where the end of an episode would be a reset button in the next episode. Either that was never referenced, or it was only referenced lightly, or only referenced if, like, say it was a special character that showed up of like in another season, they would maybe flashback and be like, oh, we've met them before. But for the most part, it was done in a sitcom format style. But Sailor Moon was a little bit more different. While most episodes kind of do hit the reset button, there's points in time where things permanently shift, like when Ami joins, when Rei joins, when you find out that she's actually Princess Serenity. Like, there's these points in time that forever alter the future episodes and the character's knowledge and your knowledge of the show too. And that's just not something that had really been done a whole lot at the time. So their Deke's goal, in my opinion, was to get you as familiar with these characters as quickly as possible, so they don't have to spend a lot of time setting up the characters every single episode. So they did kind of stereotype them a little bit. You know, Lita is the tomboy, so she's got the more gruffy voice. And Mina is the, like, airhead, so she's got the, like, giggly laugh. And you know, Serena's the crybaby, so she's got the really whiny voice. And it's just their way of heightening these characters' attributes so that at the time you didn't have to focus on relearning everything about the show every single episode. And I know that sounds asinine now, because most cartoons now have some kind of story progression in them, but it just wasn't a thing back then.
Nowadays, as much as people complain about stuff like, you know, like stuff like Steven Universe and Voltron, the Legendary Defenders, for you know, their way of handling stuff and how they handle story, props to them for like being one of the first people to start like using like continuity and start using like, you know, start using that, because it was used lightly, and now that's more like a standard where a lot of these shows, even shows like South Park, now have strong continuity attached to it for some reason. I know why, because of the video game. That's why.
I think it just makes for a more interesting story, because now the big thing, and this is actually something that I learned recently, that Japan has always been super, super focused on home media markets, and they had a lot of different types of releases of home media that we never saw. Like, there was the Laserdisc that existed in the United States, albeit extremely briefly, was a massive deal in Japan for years and years. You know, they had early adaptions to VHS, early adaptions to beta, early adaptions to being able to record episodes onto tape from your television. They had a couple of media formats. I wish that I could remember the name of it, but I just recently watched a video from Sakura Stardust, who, if you've never heard of her, she does really, really cool, interesting deep dives into Japanese urban legends and Japanese media stuff from the 80s and 90s. And she did an episode on this idol that got blacklisted. The second part's not out yet, and I'm trying to not, like, I'm forcing myself not to look up anything on this idol because I want to be surprised when her second part comes out, because she didn't reveal all the cards, obviously, in part one. But one of the things that she mentioned is this idol debuted and was the only idol to ever debut on this really short-lived home media format that was like a smaller version of a Laserdisc, I believe, like in between Laserdisc and DVD. But it came out in like the late 80s, early 90s, like real early into the Laserdisc lifespan. So way before we even had a concept of what DVDs were, they had this kind of stuff. And this is my roundabout way of saying that it was, from what I can assume, much easier for people to keep up with syndicated, like, story-driven things because there was much easier ways to play it back. And as the United States got more things like VHS tapes and DVDs and now streaming and Blu-rays, it's a lot easier to have these story-driven shows because it's so much easier to go back and get caught up if you've missed a few episodes. Whereas, you know, back in the early 90s, if you're watching a TV show and you did, like, it came on Tuesday nights at 10, and you had something to do Tuesday and you missed that episode, if it was a story-driven show, you'd be screwed because there's probably not going to be any reruns for a very long time and you missed a key plot point. So I just think that with the inventions of all these more easy ways to have playback, that the syndicated show has evolved, but that Japan obviously were much more early adapters to that. So maybe that's why that they had all of these shows that were much more story-driven, because it was more easy access to be able to catch up on it. I could also just be wildly speculating, but that was my takeaway from this. But there's been tons of home media focus and technology in general focus in Japan since the late 70s, early 80s. So it would make a lot more sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's something we discussed also, like we discussed briefly on Cynthia Cosmocast, where it's just like a lot of it was like even though like some of the VHSs, the early VHSs at the time were like $90 to $100 each. A lot of it was just like there was a lot of compilation videos, a lot of stuff where they compiled a lot of stuff. So if you missed out on episodes early on, there was compilation videos that can get you to where you need to go, or mm-hmm. if you want to get to like the best part of a certain episode, or certain thing that you want to see, like a certain fight or a certain thing. There was VHSs as well. And we were also starting to see in that time too, like you said, like the Laserdisc market was starting to get like, don't underestimate the power of Laserdisc in Japan. They loved it to death. And like I think because a lot of things are starting to go to the DVD standard, they had to transition kicking and screaming at that
point. I thought I saw somebody on my news feed, this isn't Facebook. Oh my god! I saw somebody on my Twitter feed that was talking about they're just a Laserdisc enthusiast, but they said they were gonna watch a movie on Laserdisc, and it was like a longer movie, and the Laserdiscs are massive, like they're a good like foot and a half across, like diameter easy. They're huge, maybe not a foot and a half, maybe just a foot, but they're pretty big. Like massive discs, but because media and electronics were so primitive compared to where we are now, you could only fit like maybe 45 minutes of footage. It was very high quality, and I think that's why so many people clung to Laserdisc, because it was for a long time the highest quality video footage that you could have, period. Even beyond VHS and a lot of DVDs. It was just that clear. But they were like, yeah, I'm going to have to go over and flip this disc over once and then replace it with another one and flip that disc over. And they're like, in the 2.5 hours that I watch this movie, I'm going to have to get up 4 times. And I'm like, is it worth it at that point? Like, just stream it on Netflix, girl.
Yeah. But regardless, VHSs and stuff like that were kind of like the prominent thing. And like, you know, here in the United States, like, We still made the joke of like no one can program a VCR and stuff like that. Like, why is it continuously blink and stuff like that? So only the very dedicated people that knew how to get their VHS were the ones that were watching the show like at that time initially. Or you know you or if you were or if you got like or you got to draw the card and you actually ended up and your affiliate was actually airing it at a halfway decent time. Or you just happen to get lucky with a draw as well. If you wake up just really up to watch it. Regardless, It's interesting to see where things go, and we're gonna be talking more about that stuff as time goes. Obviously, we can only discuss so much without playing out all of our cards, and I don't want to play out all of our cards just yet. Like I said, well, I already briefly mentioned SOS, but I think that's gonna be like not its own dedicated episode, but it is gonna be something that we're gonna have to like discuss a lot of when we get to that stuff, especially because like that's like the tail end of this, that would be like the tail end of the podcast, because like we have to discuss that, and then we gotta go to like the final episodes as well. So, but the that's again, episode. That's excuse
me? The lost episodes is what Junami called,
quote unquote. Yes, but there's a reason for that. Right? There's a reason why. There's a very good reason why this all happened. Regardless, I think this is a good place to I think for like introduction and stuff like that for who we are and stuff like that. I think this is a good place to stop. But we do have a surprising amount of people that responded to our Twitter thread here.
Yeah, because including one that I'm super excited about.
Yeah, because the thing is, when we do the Saint Seiya Cosmicast, we're always like, please say something. We need to get the algorithm on our side, please, please. And like, no one says anything. It's kind of like, oh, well, we'll just gotta grit our teeth and keep on going here. But no, I do this, and I'm like, oh my god, there's actual like feedback here. Like, oh my god. So let's start off with the actual responses before I go to the quotes here. We got Jonathan Ramos. They say, easy. My earliest memory was on TV spot for the premiere episode. I believe it was on UPN. What I caught my attention was a bunch of girls in tiny skirts fighting monsters, and I thought that was cool. I had to wake up earlier than usual for it since I had elementary school, but it was worth it. Yep. That's another thing too. You gotta be like, let's not mince words also. There was,
I mean, I didn't notice.
I was gonna say, like, if you're a certain kid at that time, you know. I'm not gonna judge. I'm not judging you. I'm not gonna judge anybody. What you do is what you do. I am not gonna kink shame or anything like that. But you know, let's not say either that some of these people that were watching it were like, you know. We have Cole here from at Cole's Corner. I remember watching the iconic. Yep, when it being so iconic, and also voiced over the dub was unparalleled. In my opinion, I was captivated at the moment I found it. I also remember the commercials that would hype it up, like this one, and he played us the commercial for the USA dub for the USA airing of Sailor Moon, which was like I said, it was like when they were transitioning to do the more original content, more action oriented content. They were airing it on USA. Mm-hmm. Here's your friend here. Your friend here, Rika. You know, she says, only memory I have of this show is that I was watching it at my grandmother's house when I put on sandals on. I remember transformation as a group of girls and the cats, but that's it. I'm pretty sure it was on Toonami. Never listened to the opening on like an MP3 or anything like that. And I couldn't really think of anything that was someone else like me to. But if I listened to it and recognized it for someone, if anything like that and I couldn't think of it, if someone else asked me to, but if someone listened to it, I would recognize it for some reason. I probably watched it more than I remember. I was 5. I also remember seeing it in Nick magazine once. Yeah, I remember seeing like ads for it as well, because I used to collect Disney's Adventures. It was a little book that you get like at the grocery stand. And they would also have ads for that as well. We got here Farmy Bear, like we had an interesting conversation here. And this is like the one that's like, okay, good. I am not crazy when this guy brought this up. So, Farmy Bear, Fabulous Prince of Eternia, shout out to He-Man. I watched it get into anime. So when Fox Kids advertised the Sailor Moon special, I made sure to record it. It was batshit crazy, completely out of context, and it left me speechless. I would watch it endlessly. I thought it was only one episode until the series began a few weeks later. And then we got into a thread about talking like, oh my god, like you actually remembered watching too? Because like I remember. Like I said, like other people thought, like you're crazy. They aired on Fox. It did. Now I have confirmation that it happened. Someone else was watching it as well. You know, it's not a Mandela effect. Thank you, Fabulous Prince of Eternia, aka Pharma Bear. You confirmed it. It's not just like a weird thing I imagined. Thank you. This is the one you're looking forward to. Tuxedo Mask, T on Mask on Twitter says, Jupiter comes thundering in was my first exposure to Sailor Moon. At that moment, I saw it, I knew I discovered television gold. 25 years later, and I still love the show. And Tuxedo Mask is a really prominent like person in the Sailor Moon fandom. They talk a lot about like like the experiences in Japan and whatnot. So it's really interesting to see that, like, it's interesting seeing their blog and stuff like that, and them talking about their experiences with, and like doing the research behind the scenes with the show.
It's very like in depth stuff too. Like, I don't want to say that, oh, if you're new to Sailor Moon, you shouldn't read his blog, because it's interesting in general. But he covers a lot of like super super niche topics, like meanings behind names, 90s popularity contests, who was the most popular villain that ever was in the show, which I think was Zoisite, actually. I think Zoisite was still in making popularity like poll appearances like 6 months after he died, like in the show. So but he does a lot of really really interesting deep dives and asks a lot of poignant questions that he tries to solve. Just overall, cannot say enough positive things about him.
All right, CC Takato. He's also another prominent user that's been in and around. When I was a kid, I was a big fan of the Deke Super Mario cartoon. Oh boy, still am. Mm-hmm. I used to watch the reruns on USA Network. One Saturday, they suddenly replaced there was a show, some show called Sailor Moon. I watched episode one, and I thought it was so weird, and I had so many questions, but I kept on watching. I remember too. There was like a talking cat. Why is Ray dressed like a sailor? Why does Ray have these long pigtails? Why is there an Eiffel Tower? It was before I knew the anime, what anime was, and I didn't know much about Japanese cultures then. So I began throwing it into the world of Sailor Moon with no context in 1997. It was interesting. Yeah, I'm pretty sure too. A lot of people who were watching the show, like, they had no real context to like what was Japanese culture and stuff like that. Even as much as they tried to Americanize a lot of it, anglicize a lot of it, there's still a lot of the Japanese at that league. You can tell.
I'm trying to because the through thread in this that we've seemed to come across, and when asking people about their first time watching it. And so everybody felt that it was really strange and different, but I don't remember feeling that way. Like, I don't remember.
Me neither.
Different or weird. And I don't know if that's because maybe I was like raised on Power Rangers, and I was also like a baby internet kid where it was dial up. So it's not like I'm an iPad kid equivalent today. But like, I grew up from a very early age with the internet, where I knew that I could go and I could, you know, go on to, I guess it was like Yahoo at the time. I'm trying to think how, because Google wasn't around back then.
Lycos, Alta Vista.
Yeah, go and ask these search engines questions and find answers. Not all the time were they right, because also that was before I understood that anybody can put whatever they want on the internet. Like, there was a long time where I was convinced that the moons of the Sailor Moon planets were getting Sailor Guardians in the final season and stars. Just because somebody made a bunch of fan characters online, and I took it as gospel truth, but that's beside the point. But I never found it weird. Like, I didn't find the animation style weird, but the only thing I think of is that maybe I had already seen stuff similar to that, like photos online, because I was very curious about Power Rangers. And that's one of the first things I remember doing, is looking at Power Rangers online and finding did you know Power Rangers is Japanese? Like, one of those things. And so all I can think of is that maybe I had already been slightly desensitized to, like, things that Americans find absurd about Japan, I guess. I don't know. I just never found it weird, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I guess in my case too, because I watched Saint Seiya first, and I was already getting adjusted to something like that. Mm-hmm. That'd be a total more different extreme. Watching this was like nothing to me, so it's like I'm pretty sure this was like a lot of people's first, like, and this is what I said, like, this is a lot of people's first anime, so it's like a lot of it hold this show in high regards because of that. So it's like there's like. Yeah, so like I said, like, there's a lot of people that would be cynical. They were like, oh my god, like, we need something more pure and stuff like that. But we can't take away also the fact that for a lot of people, especially from like who grew up in like the 80s and 90s, this was like this could have been their first anime.
Well, like I said, I was trying to think if I'd watched Dragon Ball Z or Sailor Moon first, because I know that I never caught Dragon Ball on actual television until after I'd seen Dragon Ball Z. But I think that maybe I had seen Dragon Ball Z first, because if I remember the Toonami lineup, Sailor Moon came before Dragon Ball Z, And it was like Sailor Moon was at 3 or 3:30 my time, and Dragon Ball Z was at 3:30 or 4. And I remember I would get off the bus and maybe catch the last just like few seconds of Sailor Moon right before the theme song started, the ending theme. But I would always watch Dragon Ball Z because I could catch it. And then I would obviously become interested in Sailor Moon and start recording them on VHS tapes and stuff so I could watch them because it aired before I could get home. But I'm pretty sure that I got into Dragon Ball Z first, and that could also be why I didn't find it weird, because maybe I got all of my, oh, that's weird kind of feelings out with Dragon Ball Z. I don't know. But it all happened pretty fast, because like I said, the Toonami realized once those two shows started taking off that they had found a niche that needed to be tapped into, and they just started going ham with all the shows.
Well, this was actually long before that. I mean, one of their very first shows was Voltron, and like, that's what kind of got them a little bit more interested. And then they eventually got they actually put in Robotech, and it was from like the popularity of Robotech that they took a risk with Dragon Ball, and then after that they got Sailor Moon, and well, that's where things exploded after that. So it was like, it was a slow kind of accumulation, but Sailor Moon was like kind of like the biggest, their biggest success. And that's interesting. Like, I want to bring up one last point. It's interesting to see. It's interesting that look at all the names I just mentioned when it comes to Toonami, especially early Toonami. When you think of early Toonami, you think Voltron, you think Johnny Quest, you think Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball Z. You think all those shows. Yeah, well, that came on before, and like, I have to correct you. It's like that was the '70s.
Look, I watched it on Toonami. That was my only frame of reference for it. All animation from like the 70s up until the mid 90s looked like it could be from any year from those decades, because they never really approved anything.
Well, then again, too, I grew up watching like older cartoons on like, again, watching it on Cartoon Network, and also watching it before that on the Cartoon Express on USA. I kind of like, okay, I knew this was an older show because it looked older, and I knew. And I recognize, like, oh, this is like they look the same style as like as a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, so that's why I kind of like knew it was like, oh, this is a no. Regardless, yeah, you have all those shows. You notice one thing about those shows: they're male orientated. This was like the very first female orientated show, out of all the shows on Toonami, I think if you were to ask me, like, what are like the two biggest shows they ever had, without a doubt it'd be Hamtaro, and it'd be. And it'd be Beast Wars when they aired it for the week. No, I'm kidding. No, it'd be Dragon Ball Z, and it'd be Sailor Moon. And if which one would be number one, I wouldn't know. Like, one day it might be Dragon Ball, one day it might be Sailor Moon. We don't know. Because, like, you see how the culture is now with Sailor Moon and with Dragon Ball, where we had Dragon Ball, they just put a movie out in theaters. And it was, like, number one in the movie theater. And I'm very sure they're going to try doing the same thing with the Eternal movie. I don't know if they are, if they not, but we do know for a fact that when they aired the Cosmos things on Netflix, they did really well for Netflix. So it's like it's still. So we're still seeing, on to this day, we're still seeing like the remnants of like that generation of Toonami that grew up with it, still with this series, like following their series that they love so much. So,
and then
one final.
Oh, one? I was just gonna say what I also wanted to say is that they also like. This was the start of the anime boom. Like, I don't want to say that Sailor Moon did it single-handedly, but I think Sailor Moon was the final push, because, like you said, they had had Dragon Ball, they had had some, like, Robotech, some other shows that were cusping about to become mainstream. But once Sailor Moon boomed, you started seeing, like, every kids show had, every kids network that had, like, a kids block had anime on it. Like, even Sci-Fi Channel had an anime block in the morning. Like,
oh, I love that stuff. Even though they're edited movies, but like there was some good stuff.
Well, they had Monster Rancher. I watched Monster Rancher every day before school for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Sailor Moon kind of came with the, it just kind of stumbled itself in the right place in the right time. It was in the right place because it was like, it was on Toonami, and it was 1998. And when it aired on Toonami, so it got more and more exposure. It was on the afternoon when it was airing, so a lot more people got to watch it. And there was another show happening at the same time called Pokemon that was getting everybody's attention with anime. So it's like it was the right show at the right time, because it was a show that's like completely different from like the Because you had Pokemon, which is like just cute little monsters doing things, and that was the main catalyst of like bringing anime. The main anime's big success was because of that. Then you had like the big burly men fighting each other with Dragon Ball Z, and then you got this more. You got this more slice of life-ish, but it's still superhero-ish show with Sailor Moon. And you had like all your markets covered. And like I said, the variety at the time, despite it being edited and stuff like that, was vast. Like you had like all these shows, and then like that's when the real explosion happened. But it was Sailor Moon was the right show at the right time.
Right.
So, and one final thing here, I got one final quote from Miriam Rachel. Princess Ozeline on Twitter. I literally saw the first episode of the show on YTV and I was instantly hooked. I remember that was very popular among my peers too. I wasn't too falling into the trends and I would stick to things after they moved on. But for a while, it was the only thing cool thing. It was once again into the very cool thing. So I'm pretty sure this person saw it and like they weren't following the trends and they just continued with it. So it's like, that's really cool. And that's the kind of experience too, because like, you know, we forget too. Not only was it an experience here in the United States, but Canada, where they produced the show, it was huge there as well. And, like, you know, I would really appreciate a lot of our Canuck friends if they can, like, send, like, their, like, testimonials and stuff like that. Even though, most of us, I think it's pretty much a solved case there with, like, unlike here in the United States, where, like, oh, it aired on, like, YTV, it aired on this day and this, like, this, blah, blah, blah. It was pretty much the same thing with, it's the same issue that it was the same thing that happened with it here when it came to the United States when it was on Toonami, but it did theirs luck earlier because there's one last little thing here that I want to bring up. And I know I'm going all over the place, but like bear with me because this is actually really interesting when it comes to like Canadian. In Canada, they have what's called CAMCOM laws, where Canada has to air certain amount of airtime to Canadian produced TV or Canadian produced anything. Mm-hmm. And they have to air it at prominent hours, and they have to do 20 hours a week of it, and stuff like dubbing falls into that category. So Sailor Moon got a lot of airtime in YTV because it kind of sneakily went through a lot of the rules. Because I know a lot of people that were in Canada, they also watched a lot of that old 60s Spider-Man, and the reason why it got through CAMCOM was because they actually did the voice acting work in Canada.
Dub that show. I need to watch it now.
it's something. It's something. It's of its time. I gotta tell you, like bring LSD.
I've seen it in Japanese. Several episodes in Japanese. But I'm a big fan of really bad tokusatsu dubs. Like,
oh no! I'm talking about the 60s TV cartoon, the one with like the
I thought you were talking about the live action. Oh, my bad. I thought you were talking about the live
action. No. That show's great. And it's unfortunate that show's like lost for the ether, unfortunately.
I've seen English dubs of like Bioman and a lot of the early Sentai and some of the some of the 2000s Kamen Rider and stuff like that. I love
really bad. God. Those Kamen Rider Kabuto English dub, just like I still wake up in cold sweat at night.
I wanna be able to watch a complete series of one, but it was only released in like Singapore, and they're notoriously bad for not archiving their stuff. There's so many lost dubs from Animax and the other dubbing places they have over there that that's not even worth it.
But because of CAMCOM laws, stuff like, you know, like I said, like if it was recorded in Canada, if it's like pre-made stuff that was recorded in Canada, then it counts as that. So it's like it got significant airtime in Canada because of that. So, like I said, there's a lot of overlap between what we watched, there's a lot of overlap between the fandom between here in the United States and Canada. And like I said, they pretty much aired the show on like their equivalent of Toonami a lot earlier. So they got to do a lot of cooler stuff. Like they got those last 17 episodes first because of that. Because of those weird CAMCOM laws, they were able to get away with getting the final episodes dubbed and all that stuff. So there you go. I put some teaching in your brains, as Jared would say. So that's about it.
Is that where those weird live action Sailor Moon intros came from?
No, those intros were made. I don't know the complete story, but there is someone that's been telling me like back. We've been back and forth with the dub and stuff like that. Let me see. But like I do know for a fact that those episodes aired like those were like specials that they put out when they aired the show during when they aired the show during Thanksgiving. Because, you know, at the time, Thanksgiving was, like, you know, all the kids were either out at the time, so they got, so they were able to boost a lot more, they were able to put more, like, more recent stuff on the air and stuff like that.
Yeah, because it was, like, the girl that was cosplaying, and it was, like, just very, it looked like local television, like, public
ads. Yeah. Yeah, it looked like that, but it was, but there's an inherent charm to that. Because I remember watching, it's like, oh, wow, this is something. But yeah, I do believe that, like, it was something that was done, like, in house at Deke, and it was just something they did just to as a spec to see if they can get gauge popularity. I do know for a fact Corzo Moon, they on Twitter we were back and forth on that, and they said, like, the person who actually played it, like, she's a really good person, but partially like she's one of the things where it's like, oh my god, like, they fear that that actress is gonna get raked through the coals if they find out, like, she's bad. No, I think the area is a lot more forgiving nowadays. Maybe. Yeah,
Saban Moon has proven that enough time has passed that I think that she'll be forgiven of her sins.
Yes. So if you're listening to that person, we hold no grudges whatsoever. We would love to have you on the show.
Team Angel Girls, you're still on thin ice, though. That was something. That was a choice.
But regardless, this is like, I wanted to keep this short here, and I just wanted to, like, just get to the basics and just, like, get our basic introduction out here. We're going to be starting the show the following, not this week, but the next week after, because mm-hmm. next week we're actually doing CosmoCast, so it's gonna be us just like doing this for like next couple of weeks. So we're gonna be doing this every 2 weeks. Our first episodes we're gonna be covering are gonna be episodes 1 through 4, because, like, we figured, like, 4 episodes. I think it's a good place for us to
that's Deke episodes 1 through 4, just for clarity, because, again, that's literally the second episode got cut, so whatever.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to participate with us, I'll put up a thread on our Twitter, and like I said, we would really appreciate if you can share this podcast with all your friends. I'll put up a website later on this week for it. I think it's gonna be like another Tumblr website, like how I have set up for the Saturday Morning Squad and for the CosmoCast as well. But we would really appreciate, like, you know, all, like, if fans can check out for right now, the only social media we got is the Twitter. So you can check that out, you know, spread the word from Twitter. And then, like, hopefully too, like, we can start figuring things out. Cause, like I said, like, this is barely just episode. This is not even episode 1. This is episode 0. Once I start putting things together, like, it's going to be a lot more places, like, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, when that gets that cleared up, we'll inform us. We'll inform everybody. Like I said, also too, we'll make the way as well.
Before we leave, I want to emphasize that this is specifically about the Deke dub. It's going to have a lot of focuses on what is happening specifically in the Deke version. Sometimes we'll provide context for it, but we just want to have fun watching this. Slightly cringy, slightly nostalgic, well, incredibly nostalgic, but also with the cringe overtones and the, like, super 90s aesthetics going full force, and just kind of vibe and enjoy our time watching it. This is not like here's what they changed and here's what they didn't change. And, you know, so me personally, I'm going to be viewing it through the eyes of somebody that takes what these characters says as the truth. So when they say that Zoisite's a woman, I might give them some side eye because I know that that's a dude, but, you know, we're going to go, it's her. She's on screen, you know? So just a forewarning that if it wasn't clear enough, this is about the dub. So we're going to be mocking the dub. We're going to be laughing at the dub and laughing with the dub. But anyway, I digress. We should wrap this up.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, like, I was gonna wrap things up by saying, like, you know, Comrade Furry, is there anything you would like to promote out? Like, I know you mentioned the ancient anime and whatnot, but it's like, is there anything else you'd like to promote? Anything else that you'd like to discuss before we head out?
Yeah, so ancient anime should be back in February, maybe a little bit later, just because I want to gauge how the workflow is gonna go with these two podcasts. Ancient anime is not dead, so don't freak out or don't be upset. I just want to make sure that I can get into the flow and make everything manageable for work time. But in the meantime, you can always catch me on the CosmoCast, which, like Ramsey said, we're about to be back ramping up production. I believe I very, very like strongly believe that now that we have Minhas on the show, who is our new third person, we've been able to round out each other a lot more consistently, and we've been able to stay consistent with recording just because we found somebody that really clicks with us, not only personally, but in a time management wise as well. So it's a very consistently fun and funny podcast to check out. Or you can follow me specifically out there on, I kept wanting to say Facebook. I don't even use Facebook. I've got Facebook on the brain today. I guess it's the 90s and early 2000s vibes taking me back in time. But you can find me on Twitter, is what I was trying to say, at Kamen Rider Furry. I do have an Instagram that I've lied for months saying I'm going to keep using and then I never do. But you can follow me there if you want to. I've noticed a few people have followed me, and I don't think I posted anything in like 3 months, so I'm sorry. But I'll try and do.
And you're doing so good. Future. You're posting dolls. I'm like, oh, I want to see what new dolls that he got.
I know. I think, to be honest with you, this is going to sound so stupid. Please, nobody judge me. But it's on the third page on my phone, like when you have the little menus, and I hardly ever go past the second page. So I think I just.
Oh Lord. Okay.
There. Maybe I should just reorganize the apps on my phone to use it more frequently. But yeah, you can follow me at Kamen Rider Furry on both those platforms. And like I said, I'm also in the Cosmocast and in Ancient Anime.
All right. As for me, I always mentioned earlier that I'm doing the same thing at Cosmocast with this guy over here and also with Manhus. We'll be back this next week on the 29th. We're gonna be recording that. And we're gonna be doing we're gonna be back to the original series until the CGI show starts up again, because they said it was gonna start up, but we haven't got a concrete date as to when exactly it's gonna start. So, you know, we're gonna continue moving forward with everything, because like I really wanna gain momentum as we wanna get momentum with that show, with more listeners, getting more feedback, getting more, you know, things more thrown our way, because we have big plans. We wanna get more people involved, we wanna get more things involved, because like our big end goal is like to get the attention of like Sony and see if we can like get like ourselves like the premiere or something like that, the new live action movie. But that's a pipe dream. I also host another podcast called the Saturday Morning Squadron. Unfortunately, my other co-host Rob, he is unfortunately out at the moment. So I'm gonna be doing the show with a special guest, and this week I'm gonna do this show with my friend Jared, and we're gonna be discussing Dungeons and Dragons. It's been a really busy month for Dungeons and Dragons, and we're going to devote pretty much all of the entire episode on it, because like one, there's not much else news to talk about other than that, but two, it's like, you know, that's like the big topic mm-hmm. right now, the big talking point right now in fandom right now, what happened with some very diverse
opinions on it too.
So yeah, if you want to hear the opinions from like someone that's gotten into got into Dungeons and Dragons thanks to Jared, and someone that's been playing since second edition, you know, check us out, because like, you know, we're gonna provide a lot of comments and commentary and stuff like that, like from perspective of someone that's new to it and someone that's been a veteran to it. Check that out. I'll also I'll post every link that you hear on this show on our show description, because like I'm pretty sure like those who are interested will want to check out that stuff as well. All right, it's been fun, but unfortunately we have to go. So with that said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for Kamen Rider Furry. I'm Ramses, and remember, Sailor Moon says
day dreams are nice, especially the ones about food. Oh, daydreams are cool, all right. But just don't forget about the here and now. The time you spend daydreaming, you could be out making your daydreams come true. See you next time!